Welcome, everyone. We can begin. We have a quorum. If you haven't signed in, please come in and grab a card. It is so nice to see all of your lovely faces. We've made it another day. Despite having no promise that we would make it today, no promise for tomorrow. And here we are. Thank you for being here. We are going to start with the approval of the agenda, and I believe there might be a suggestion to change the agenda to amend it. Are there any senators who would like to amend the agenda for today?
Yes, please.
Please state your name and what you would like.
First, an apology, but I'm sitting here on behalf of the Policy Board on Administration, and we'd like to propose a change to the Queen's College classroom recording policy.
So we will take a duly made motion to add under new business. We're going to first vote on whether we actually vote on this. To add under new business a motion to change the recording policy. Is there a second?
Second.
So seconded. Take the liberty of asking for unanimous consent. Does anyone object to considering this business under new business? Seeing none, we'll add that. Kat, please, under, that'd be 7A. Any other amendments to the agenda? Anything anyone else would like to talk about formally? Okay, seeing none, seeing none, I'll ask for unanimous consent of the agenda. Any objections? Oh, Simone? Simone, you got the aisle that has the short microphone. I don't know for what purpose they've made. I'm thinking there might be a musical reason, perhaps a guitar or a cello of some sort, but you might need to take that off the mic stand. Or even better, thank you. Please introduce yourself.
I'm a team of college graduates, so they all watch me back here. I think I want to amend to add the elections report to the agenda.
As the...
So I'm going to take this as a motion to amend the agenda.
To add the 2025 faculty and student election dates to the agenda.
And we'll put that under committee reports item D, if that's what you're asking?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a motion to amend the agenda to also include the 2025 elections committee report as 5D. I'll take that as unanimous consent, or a request for unanimous consent. Are there any objections to that? Okay, seeing none, we'll amend the agenda to include that item.
The other amendments report.
I forgot to say, Simone Gill would chair elections.
Thank you, Simone. You did forget. I wasn't going to call you out on it. But any other amendments to the agenda?
Approval.
Okay, so...
Any objections to approving?
Oh, I'm sorry. Any objections to approving the agenda as agenda, the agenda as amended, these two items? Seeing none, we'll move along to our first item, which is to approve our Academic Senate meeting minutes of October 10th. Quite a hefty tome from last time and today. Are there any questions, amendments, adjustments to the minutes from last time? Don't see anyone clamming for the microphone, so I will ask for unanimous consent in approving the meeting minutes from last time. Ask for any objections. Seeing none, we'll consider those approved. Next, announcements, administrative reports, and memorials. Does anyone have any announcements? Okay, I have one to make. I like to let other people go first, but I will say, I've done this a couple times, the executive committee, which meets 2 weeks before the and generally 2 weeks before the Senate meets, the executive committee of the Senate acted on this body's behalf to replace a name of a faculty member on the search committee for the dean of the School of Business, which we recommend to the president. And the executive committee replaced the name, adding Stephen Pitchner from economics as the replacement seat for that search. The executive committee, if I could speak on its behalf, felt there was a kind of timeliness to this because typically searches for deans are very important. They take a long time, and here we are already in November. So we didn't want to wait until the Senate meeting and put the name forward. Anytime the executive acts on behalf of the Senate can raise objections, ask questions, and that action can always be overturned, et cetera, et cetera. So now is the opportunity where I announce it and then see if anyone has any questions about this particular member's name or anything else regarding the search for the Dean of the School of Business. And if you do, you could just go to the microphone and state your name. Thank you, Sari.
My name is Sari Celesti from Wall Street. I would like to take this opportunity to ask about the dean's search. So I'd like to ask if the Senate could get more details about the search, with the details of the search and the job description. And I wanted to ask if the administration could share more about the strategy, so this is the boost enrollment and the goals.
Thank you, Sari.
I have one more question. I was wondering, as far as the search, the detail of the search, I was wondering if someone could tell us a little bit more about the role of the donor in the search, the donor for the NSAs.
Thank you, Sari. So I heard three sort of general questions. The job description, the strategy behind the search and the hiring, perhaps involving enrollments, et cetera, and the role of the donor.
Provost, and I just want to thank Dean Yearwood for figuring out that it's far better to just sit down and try to ramble this very short microphone. So, thank you, Dean Yearwood. That's why she's seeing creative problem solving. So, thanks for your questions, Sari. I know there's a lot of it's a process of change, so I can say that it's always best to be communicating as much as possible when we're undergoing change, and hiring a new academic dean is a big change. We have a lineup of four academic deans at the moment, and this would be the addition of one more academic dean. And that's a big change for Queen's College, as is the addition of a School of Business, which in 2021, so we're nearing the kind of fourth year of the existence of School of Business. So adding a dean to oversee and provide vision and leadership for the School of Business is an important milestone in the growth and maturation of the School of Business. We are indeed launching a search, and as Chair Ferguson noted, we now have a full complement of folks populating the search committee. So as with other academic deans, the composition of the search committee is governed by the bylaws of the Academic Senate. And most of the search committee members, all but one, are nominated by you all, and they're designed to ensure representation from across the institution. The only member that the administration appoints is the search committee chair. It's a member of my team, Associate Provost for Innovation and Student Success, Natalia Wolfson, will be chairing the search. So we have the job description teed up, and the job description posted is a public institution, so our positions from the entry level support people, operational faculty, and ECP roles like this one are posted, and we'll be able to read that once it's posted, but I've definitely been involved in the drafting of the job description, and it is a pretty straightforward academic dean's position. I would say that the one difference with the dean of a professional school, like a business school, like a law school or a medical school, that dean would have the same kind of additional expectation, which is a lot of fundraising. So one of the things that the dean of business will do is probably more actively fundraise than the other academic deans do. So the initial duties of this dean are going to be readying the School of Business for accreditation. Typically, schools of business that are legitimate are AACSB accredited. That's a fairly long time horizon. We're looking at about 7 to 8 years from the start of the dean to actual accreditation at the School of Business. And there's a lot of things that need to be lined up for the School of Business to be accredited. So that dean will be overseeing that process. And they'll be looking at the academic programming. As you know, the School of Business was formed by combining the Department of Economics and the Department of Accounting. So that dean will want to advise me about what program inventory look like that best suit our students here at Queens College. Do we need to add some programs? Do we need to diversify in certain ways so that people will be very involved in researching and advising me about what academics should look like in the School of Business? And then, as usual, deans are really on the first with managing budgets and hiring faculty. So the duties of the dean of the School of Business will look a lot like the duties of the other deans, with the exception that there will be a clear fundraising expectation. For this role, because it's a new role, and it's a high-stakes and high-invisible role, we'll be using a search firm. And we just notified 2 days ago that we'll be able to use Bookkeeper, which is a nationally recognized search firm. I think they were involved in Frank Wu's search. And CUNY tends to use them for deans and above. For those types of searches. I work with them a lot. They're very professional. We used Wikkeeper when we did the search for the dean of the School of Education. It was a great experience. So we will be using a search firm. And my hope and expectation is that we will have a dean here on the ground sometime in the summer of 2025, and our fiscal year starts on July 1st. It would be ideal to have a dean in place beginning of July, so that they can get their feet on the ground before the faculty come back and things are going to get in the sink. Does that answer your questions about the search? Good. You mentioned the School of Business as an enrollment strategy. Is this right? And am I getting this?
Just like point of information, that was my words. I will say that I've heard questions about how would this impact enrollments in terms of, are we expecting that the School of Business will bring more students? How would that work initially, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. As you may know, my previous employment was at Baruch College, and Baruch has a very established, high-profile School of Business. Baruch is kind of all about the business school. And so I have some experience at an institution with a mature business school where the dean has paid a very high salary. 50% of the students major in business. It really kind of floats the entire boat that is Baruch College. We're not looking at that for the next 10 years. We're looking at a situation much more like College of Staten Island that is a fairly new business school. So initially, the School of Business at Queens College is going to be a gigantic draw for students. However, we do know, and I spent part of this afternoon looking at Bureau of Labor Statistics and New York State and City labor market information about the demand for degrees and things like accounting and management and finance and economics. They're very strong. Those degrees are very strong. They're very much in demand by our students. Here at Queens College, we're not a Manhattan-based institution. Our students come from Queens and Long Island, and most of them will stay in Queens and Long Island. They'll work with family businesses, and they'll be engaged in entrepreneurship. And so we're really going on with a program that focuses that way. Eventually, this will be a big deal for Queens College, and it will, in net terms, contribute to the institution, but it will take some investments, some TLC, in the early stages. Last thing, another question about the role of the donor. The donor is a really cool guy, Frank Yu, class of 1994. So he is a graduate of Queens College. He spent some time with our students 2 days ago, met a bunch of students from Econ and Accounting and faculty as well. Some of the faculty in this room were there for that session. And he's an extremely humble person, and that's not common with donors at that level. So he's reluctant to have us reveal the actual number, the number of dollars that he's committed to the deanship, but it is a number in the mid 7 figures that would be sufficient to cover the majority of the salary of the dean. So that's what I'd authorize to say. The deanship will also not be named after him. It will be named after his company, Alley Bridge. So it will be the Alley Bridge Dean of the School of Business. Any other questions that I'm able to answer, I'll be happy to do so.
Does anyone have any other questions? While I wait for people, or for Larissa to come down, one other one that I have heard is a question about space on campus. Does the administration anticipate the School of Business occupying new space, taking over space, et cetera?
At the moment, no, and there are no plans to build any new buildings.
Thank you.
I changed that at the moment.
Yep.
Could you say a little bit more about the role of the donor outside of the funding?
Sure, in the selection, right? As we're walking, I was thinking I didn't answer that part of the question. We will appropriately engage the members of our Queen's College Foundation. We were at a great meeting of the Business School Advisory Board, which is comprised of a subset of our Queen's College Foundation members. These are guys from the corporate world. They are from law and finance, largely, and dedicate their time as volunteers. Some of them are retired, they're all QC alums, and they dedicate their time to helping us out, fundraising and managing our finances. And a subset of these people have formed the Business School Advisory Council, and they were great about sharing some of their thoughts on the deanship, what qualities they want to see. And I did take notes, but at the end of the day, this is an academic dean. That person will report to me and I'm the hiring manager. So they will be appropriately involved, and I would expect that that would be in the form of a panel of a few of them with which the candidates would meet. They would be able to ask questions, they would provide feedback, just like any other panel of people meeting with somebody for a role like that. I would take that feedback under advisement along and at the same level as the feedback from faculty, from students, from any other stakeholders. So I see them as stakeholders. They're definitely not driving the decision here. But I do appreciate their support. They're deeply committed to Queen's College. And they've really been fantastic partners and will continue to be fantastic partners in particularly identifying career opportunities and internships for their students.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? We could even take a comment. Yes, please. Sarah, you get to speak one more time. There's rules about that. Oh. Thank you, Karen.
Karen Consolidator of Language and Literatures. Specifically, I'm wondering about the way school business will fit into Queen's College's mission as a liberal arts institution. Will resources such as the administrators, because the dean cannot do everything by him or herself, be moved from other programs or departments into School of Business? What will the effect be on humanities, for instance, at Queen's College? And how does this change the mission and the structure of Queen's College, such as the Committee of Seven? Will there be additional administrative support for this school business, and where will these resources be coming from? As I understand, they will not be coming from the donor. So those are my questions.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks. Let's see if I can respond to most of what you asked. I'm glad you started out by asking about our mission. Really important to remember what our mission is. And it's been interesting to talk to faculty about their engagement with our mission. I think we're all more familiar with our model. We learn so that we serve. That's nice and concise and resonates with almost everybody on this campus. The mission is a little trickier. It's a mission statement that we have articulated in our current strategic plan. It's really lengthy, it's a whole paragraph. So one of the things I hope that we do in our next strategic planning exercise is cut that down and make it more focused and concise. But since the time that I've been here, we really have attention between are we primarily a teaching institution or are we primarily a research institution? And
what is the role of the liberal arts and science in what we do. So I'll tell you what I think, but again, I would refer you for a written statement of our mission for a strategic plan with the caveat that it's not the best mission. So I think we're better than that. So Carnegie Corporation categorizes institutions of higher education. And in the Carnegie classification, which is kind of the gold standard, we are an M1 institution. We are a large master's program institution. That's a bucket. And it's a bucket that tends to straddle research and teaching in kind of a productive tension. And we're a good place to have faculty who are really double down on the research. They do world-class, national-funded, high-level stuff in their labs and in their theaters and in their other spaces, whether those are fields or other places that they conduct their scholarship and creative activities. And we have folks that are just outstanding teachers, particularly our lecturers who are hired to teach. And then we have folks who do both things well. And in my experience, people who do one thing will tend to do all things well. So we have a real range of faculty interests and faculty strengths that would span both research and teaching here. I view Queen's College, and when I came here, I had this in my head, but it wasn't fleshed out, and then I had the opportunity to interview for the job that I have now pretty recently. And I really see Queen's College as built on a very strong foundation of liberal arts and sciences in terms of academic offerings that we're known for and that our students seek us for. We have a very strong foundation in the liberal arts and sciences onto which are attached or from which grow really renowned professional expertise and education, sort of the tapper of our college that goes right back to the town. And also some of the newer growths. One of those would be the school of business. I really see this as part of the maturation and evolution of our college, but I expect this productive tension about who we are and what we do to continue, and I think it's a healthy conversation to have. But I don't see the school of business as fundamentally compromising our identity and our purpose and our values, which I think are all some better things to think about in our mission, our identity and our purpose and our values. I've been concerned, and I think the students will probably nod their heads along with me, that we make sure that we meet our students where they are today in terms of what they're looking for, an education at Queen's College, and where they want to go in their lives. While I don't expect that the School of Business will metastasize and take over the identity of Queen's College at any time in the near future, I do expect that it will be a strong branch in that trunk of liberal arts and sciences. So I hope that helps to, from my role, which has some sway in what this looks like, particularly in strategic planning and hiring and program development, I hope that helps to reassure you about where I stand with respect to questions of identity, purpose, and value. Where will the support, I think at the heart of people's concern around this change process is how is this going to be funded? And that's a legitimate concern. We do have a gift from Frankie, which will go a long way for funding the dean's salary in perpetuity. But the additional supports, at this point in time, I'll tell you that everything is contingent on enrollments. I can go to Tableau every day and I look at where we are with our spring enrollments. It's a little too early to tell. But if our enrollments stabilize, continue to drop in the way that they have over the past few years, we will be able to build out in several areas that we really want to grow in. And I'm thinking of things like data analytics. So something that the faculty have clamored for and our students have really asked for. I would really love to build that up. We have some deep needs in some of our departments that have experienced attrition and retirement. And we really need to backfill those if we're going to make good on this plane that we provide a solid liberal arts and sciences education. So really my job is to balance the navigation of the financial difficulties posed by enrollment declines with not sitting in the corner and cutting things. If that becomes my job, I'll retire next year. But we also need to focus on investing and growing things that make sense for our students now. That was a lot of soliloquy. I don't know if that answers all the practical questions, but I don't know that I can answer all of the practical questions. But that's what I know.
Thank you, Provost Price. Does anyone else have any questions?
Yes.
I think you answered it, but I missed the answer.
I was wondering if you could specify the role of the donor in research. Is the donor just saying
so I'm not sure about the specific role of the donor. If you're concerned about the donor picking the dean, that's not going to happen.
The donor, if you're concerned about the donor picking the dean, that's not going to happen. I'm a hiring manager, and ultimately, I decide in concert with the president about who the next dean is. And it will be driven primarily by our academics. This is an academic dean.
Thank you, Provost Price. Any other comments, questions? We appreciate you being here and answering. And I should we can give a round of applause? Why not? I meant to say before we began, for context, I was talking to President Wu about this over email, and I almost said in person, but it was in Zoom, so that's not really in person. And so Provost Price has stepped in to answer some of the questions that he would normally be able to answer. And I will say that this is for my successor, because this is my last term, but that I would anticipate, and I'm certain that it will happen, that the administration works with this body on both considering questions about charter changes. Is it a committee of eight, as Karen asked? Do we need to add Senate seats for the school, et cetera, like that, some of those kind of procedural governmental things. But as always, we would also expect all curricular decisions to go through this body. So I anticipate there being future opportunities to ask these kinds of questions, and as things become more formal and a dean is hired and proposals are made, that we, as senators, have the right and responsibility to pose those questions to that person. And I'm looking forward to that. And I can't invite them because I won't be here, but maybe the next chair will invite them to come and give us a sense of what they have in mind and to address some of that as well. I'm making the rewind sound, the flashback thing, because on the table right now still is the announcement I made that the executive committee has asked, and now is the time, if anyone doesn't like this and wants to object, you come up and you make a motion to amend the agenda. And otherwise, that was just an announcement I made that we fill the seats. Anyone want to do so? Okay, seeing none, I'll ask one more time, any other announcements? Does anyone want to say anything? Any Christmas parties, holiday parties, excuse me, that you want to invite me to? Any cool department soirees? Oh, never mind, okay. Moving on, we have no special motions, so we'll go to committee reports. Is there a report, Ken, from the undergraduate curriculum committee? I expect there is. I may be mistaken, but there might be a change here. Let's see. Sorry. I'll get a little ribbon for it next time. Reserve sign.
Excuse my back. Ken Lure, chair of the undergraduate curriculum committee. The first thing I have is an editorial change to something that we previously approved, and that is a problem with the title of a course. The title of the course was too long for the computer system to hold. CourseDog has a limit. CourseDog is the manager of what used to be our college bulletin. So now there is a new title. It is also long. So the title for SEYS 382 will now be Instruction and Assessment in Teaching Science and Tech to Middle, Childhood, and Adolescent Students. A long title, but it fits.
It's on.
Aside from that, I'd like to move the UCC minutes of October 10th and ask for unanimous consent.
I'm trying to see if I can pull that up for completeness' sake.
I think it's something that we...
I see, okay. So, The original title is in the old minutes. You've given us and our office the correct title, so we'll take that as an editorial amendment, and there's a duly made motion. We are going to consider a motion later about course dog, a phrase which is making me have more feelings than I wish I had, but we understand the correction being that this computer system has a limitation on the number of characters that faculty are allowed to propose their course titles, and the understanding is this department has agreed to change it in order to move the course along. Are there any objection, is there any objection to unanimous consent for the UCC minutes? Okay, seeing none, we'll adopt those, and we'll thank the committee as always for its work. We appreciate you very much. Is there a, and I think there are, report from the Graduate Curriculum Committee?
I can't sit down for anything. David Lottie, Biology, Chair of the Graduate Curriculum Committee. I'd like to move approval of the minutes from October 9th as amended this morning.
You threw me for a loop real quick. Can you remind us of the amendments of this morning?
Yes. On page 23 to 26 of our minutes, and I think probably 120-something of the packet, but there were some ECP program titles that were incorrect, and we amended those.
You said titles.
Titles of programs.
Thank you. Kat's helping me find this just for thoroughness' sake and to make sure that we're all on the same page. And Kat did send that this morning, but the titles are what are changed here. Thank you. Are there any objections or concerns or questions about the GCC minutes? Okay, seeing none, we'll consider those adopted. Thank you, Dave. Next, nominating committee report. That's 117.
Sarah Slusky, the nominee. I move that we accept the nominating committee.
And to ask unanimous consent.
I ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you, Sari, and I'll just say, I don't think any of these are contested. These are some replacement seats and empty seats that are being filled. The nominating committee report happens a little bit later in the cycle, so we tend not to send that to you guys until like the week of. So pause for a moment to see if anyone has any objections to the nominating committee report. Any mortal enemies on this list? Okay, seeing none, we'll consider the report accepted. Thank you, Sari. And next we've added item D, the elections report. Is our dean here? Would she like to present such report?
Simone,
I'm talking to you.
Simone. We don't have that.
I see, okay, great. Let me know if this is the right information. Yeah.
I'd like to make one amendment.
Sorry, can you just announce your name?
One editorial change on the nominations dated record 221-25.
Right, it's a mistake.
And then I'd like to move for unanimous consent, providing that edit.
Thank you, Dean Yearwood. So we have an editorial amendment to correct the year from 2024 to 2025, which would probably work better for all of us. Otherwise, these would be the nomination periods. I'll look to the students. Any objections to these dates?
And these are both faculty and students at the same time.
Faculty, yes. I probably shouldn't have singled the students out. I apologize. Seeing no objections, we'll accept these dates. Thank you, Simone. Appreciate it. Okay, old business. Nominations to nominating committee. Back to the students. You're on the hot seat twice in a row. We have two empty seats. We have a seat on the nominating committee. The nominating committee just did that really cool report that Sari presented. It was like really exciting and all that. The nominating committee meets to fill all of the other committees that we have, except for the executive committee, which is elected by this body. And we have an arts and humanities and an education seat. Are there any nominations for the arts and humanities seat? Seeing none, I'll ask, are there any nominations for the education seat? Seeing none, we're going to have to move along, but guess what? We're going to do this next month. It's going to keep coming up. So if you are a faculty member in the arts and humanities or education, you have a student that you think would serve on the nominating committee, I'd make a plug for inviting them. It's not very onerous. It is often, I'm sort of joking, it is often simply making sure that the wheels keep moving and that seats are filled. But occasionally we do interesting things like dean searches, provost searches, and stuff that's important. So that's a plug for that. Otherwise, we'll talk about this in a month. Next, motion regarding course numbering. This appears under old business because I tabled it last month. And I'm feeling the twitch of course dog already. I'll preface this, as I did last time, by saying I greatly appreciate the work of the provost office, Tricia, Maria, the work of the registrar, Jomi, everyone, Joyce Kong, everyone who's involved in the courses, the numbering, how we get the things in there, you know, really how the sausage is made, so to speak. I drafted this motion because, well, I won't say why, I'm not supposed to editorialize about it. So I will move old business here, a motion regarding course numbering, and we have copies that were distributed, I believe. So if anyone needs a moment to look at it, you can raise your hand or something like that. But I'll go ahead because this is a little bit different and ask for any debate for or against this motion. Please. So I was debating with our parliamentarian if I should use a different microphone because I'm loath to abuse the great powers that they give me with this, and I got the right next to me. So Kevin Ferguson, Department of English, speaking on behalf of the Department of English and myself, I think there's two issues. One, there's like 17 issues, but I'll just limit myself to two. One is that the stated reasons, and again, not from Queen's College, but from what I'm hearing from CUNY Central, for why we cannot do something that we want to do seem fallacious to me, incorrect. That it's we can have different course numbers. We've done this for dozens and dozens and dozens of years. Why can't we suddenly do this thing? And it's created some administrative problems for us. We've had courses that are delayed. There's like, you know, structural kind of issues at play that are kind of gumming the wheels up. I also think this is a great example of a larger problem of computing resources at CUNY Central, at public education in general, where our decisions are being made by the affordances and limitations of computer systems. You have to use Brightspace. Brightspace does X, Y, and Z. It does not do A, B, and C. You have to log in here to do this. You have to log in there to do that. So typically with the motion, all the whereases are kind of bullshit that you can ignore. The resolved is the kind of real stuff. But I really do think that the fourth one there, it's our belief and practice that policies relating to curriculum should be decided by us, by student faculty experts, and not by computer systems, is also an important point to make. And again, I'm not pointing fingers at Kylie Hall about this, but to say that. And that's why I included some of these other, there's many of them, but CUNY First, CourseDog, Navigate, Brightspace, all of these systems that CUNY Central is requiring us to use that, again, really limit in practical and fundamental ways our ability to have the freedom to make curricular decisions that we think are best or the faculty think are best is another kind of problem. I don't see this as like changing the world entirely. CUNY Central could, you know, completely ignore us, And again, I'm hoping to work with the provost office and Frank on this going forward, but I think it's, I would argue, important for us to make a stand about this issue. Any other debate? Larissa?
We see one more back there. Larissa, anthology. We encountered an issue where we could not reduce the course number, even though we've been doing it for 8 years or more. And this happens over time as topics get outdated and faculty retire and we know we're never going to teach something again. And if the course number fits in a certain part of the curricular sequence that makes most sense for students, then it would make sense to put a new course in that spot to say old course and never be taught again. So there seems to be some confusion as to whether we're being limited to this because of the limitations of the software or because King's Central has decided that we can suddenly no longer use course numbers again. And if that's the case, then we need a directive that is clear from King's Central with a reason why we can't do it. And so this is in part, I think, motivated by a desire for King's Central to be clear about policy.
Thank you, Larissa.
And that partnership by Provost, if I could just add a couple of totally clarifying pieces of information. As to the limitations of computer systems, I am as frustrated as everybody else is. I'm going to spend part of my day tomorrow at a course dog training. I'm mandated to go, as is a bunch of people on my team. So, this is enterprise software. In other words, it's procured and configured and managed by Team Central. We don't have much of any local latitude over how the software operates, what has been purchased, what functions are turned on, and what like the character limits are in different places. Just we have zero say in these. So I do find that frustrating, but I don't know what kind of leverage I would have getting more money over computer systems. So I'll just say that. With respect to reusing course numbers, I have been looking into this pretty extensively, so I'm just curious about it. Typically, and I wish our registrar were here, next time we meet, he probably should be here because he can answer questions differently than I am. It's mostly registrar function stuff. But most institutions do not allow reutilization of course numbers. And the reason is that we have students coming back, and we've had students come back in their 90s saying, you know what, I was 3 credits shy of getting a degree and 5 down on the finish my bachelor's degree. So we have to take their credits from 60 years ago and try to create equivalencies to what we're teaching today. And so in the interest of creating a stable record of what we've taught, we're told by the community that we cannot reuse course numbers, and that is in line with how most institutions operate. I have come across a couple of institutions that have sort of a statute of limitations, so if you haven't taught course in 5 years, you can use course numbers. But the reason for that, I think, is not obstinacy, although maybe some obstinacy in there, is primarily creation of a durable archive so that students can come back and pick up where they left off. The particular issue in anthropology and other departments who are in your boat is that you have a 3-digit course numbering protocol and you have subfields. Geography is another common geographer. Geography has 3 different subfields. And so if you only have a 3-digit series of numbers, you're going to have a pretty limited inventory of course numbers to use, and sooner or later, you're going to run out of course numbers. And in doing my exploring, I found all sorts of institutions that ran out of course numbers, and they moved to a 4-digit system. So I've been talking with Chair Ferguson about maybe looking at a course number inventory as a whole. You know, some departments have 4-digit numbers, numbers from the departments have three-digit numbers. Some have created four-digit numbers by adding a zero in front. Some have created a four-digit number by adding a zero in the back. Some departments use five-digit numbers. Some departments have three digits a dot and two numbers. Some departments have three digits a dash and two numbers, which makes sense if you're in your department, because you know why this happened. But when you step back and look at the college as a whole, it's tempting for students. I remember back when I was a freshman, and my father was first generation, so he had done college, but my parents had no idea how to advise me what classes to take, so I just took a bunch of classes that I thought were interesting, and they ended up being senior and junior level classes, and I was way over my head. And so when a student looks at course numbers that have different digit protocols, and for some reason we don't use the number four in front of an AR class, although we're a four-year institution, it's just really confounding for students. So I think primarily from that rationale, and I want to take that holistic look at our course number, and I know there's a couple of departments that are thinking about doing this, so I might take this as an opportunity to figure it out on this.
Thank you, Provost Price. Any other comments? Ken?
Speaking of Ken Lord, Computer Science and Chair of the Graduate Curriculum Committee, speaking on behalf of our committee, I would say that we wrestled with this problem monthly, that we run out of course numbers, we have titles that are too long. And I've always looked at it as a problem of the technology tail wagging the curriculum dog.
You're here.
And I think it's very important that we take a stand, such as this excellent motion does, to say that this is a problem that's being put onto our academic side, where we have these enterprise systems that are foisted upon us without any consultation. I didn't come near any consultation about course dog, except to hear the name. And I would have had some suggestions, I think, to alleviate some of these problems in the choice. So I would like to speak very strongly in favor of this motion, and that's all.
Thank you, Ken. Any other debate? Please.
What are the appropriate faculty bodies the Q resolution is proposing should govern course number and design? Would that be the academic senate? Because earlier in one of the whereases, it talks about programs and departments.
Oh. Sorry, to if I understand your question, what are the appropriate academic bodies that would look at course numbering? Speaking for myself, I would take that to be the individual programs and departments through the undergraduate curriculum committee or the graduate curriculum committee and then through the Senate. The idea being that the department should decide what they want to be 201, 202, 203, some sequence such as that, et cetera. Rather than, I think you're asking, like an outside.
Well, would the undergraduate curriculum committee, for example, be able to systematize, to create a systemization college-wide, or would that exceed, would that not be an appropriate body for making that decision?
That's great. I'll just repeat that in the microphone. So the question was, can the UCC, the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, would they be an appropriate body to systematize a course numbering system or not? And I would say from the Senate's perspective, David, correct me if I'm wrong, that would absolutely be an appropriate body to present a motion to the Senate for the Senate's ratification. And I'll echo something that Provost Price said. She and I have been in conversations about systematizing, the best way to systematize course numbers across the college, because it is a little bit of a mishmash and people do all kinds of stuff. So I do take the point that there is an opportunity here as we're considering course numbers and course logs and things like that to say, actually, yeah, we've got, we're doing kind of things ad hoc, the problems are gonna snowball and pile up, and like, what if we individually as departments and programs looked at things, but also we did something that was coherent to students so that they could understand when they're looking at anthropology versus English versus computer science, that there's a kind of normality of what the expectations might be. Very early discussions about that, but hopefully that's something that the UCC and the GCC are involved in because they have expertise in this. I will also just take my second opportunity to talk Kevin Ferguson, Department of English here, not Chair of Senate, to push back on the notion that the course dog is a superior way to maintain a record of a student's progress in college. We have gotten by perfectly fine with PDFs and print bulletins. As someone who used to do transfer credits for the writing, across the curriculum writing intensive credits, well familiar with going to a college that had a computerized system and being completely at sea about the course the student took 15 years ago, and was always thrilled to find that dusty PDF that said, nope, that course was this, and it doesn't have the W, and so it doesn't count. So I take the point that it's intended to be more efficient, better record keeping, but I think it actually does the exact opposite. So I'm speaking in favor of my own motion, which I think is disallowed by Robert's rules, and I'll shut up here unless anyone else has any other debate or discussion. I'm going to ask for unanimous consent. Are there any objections? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes. On to new business. We have an amendment here. It's not going to be on the agenda, but I think I'm going to turn to my colleague, Larissa. You get to come down again. You can use the chair if you want.
So if I can read this, let's see. The Policy Board of Administration, oh, it's right there, good. Policy Board of Administration proposes these amendments to the Queens College Classroom Recording Policy. We're basically adding photography along with video and audio recording as being prohibited in a classroom unless it is explicitly authorized by an instructor in writing. That's the amendment change. So, any discussion?
Okay, so we'll take that as a motion to amend the policy that was, I think we just did this a few months ago, that was recently passed to the rationale to include video recording and audio recording. Yes, please.
What's the reasoning behind this?
I'm sorry, can you just state your name and affiliation?
From physics.
The reasoning is to prevent unauthorized photographs in classrooms without a certain consent.
But you can give out a verbal or a consent.
We are suggesting it needs to be written consent because verbal consent can be contested, whereas written consent can be prevented if the issue is not contested.
No, tell me this because maybe something controversial happened somewhere else. But in physics, we teach a lot of research classes, we teach a lot of lab classes. So students need to take photographs and setups or progress samples they are working with. Or if you have, for example, a local students need to take photos of, for example, some of the references that are cited. So I think this statement is too broad. It may affect
do you think it's possible for, in those cases, for the instructor to simply put a blanket permission in the syllabus?
No, because, for example, colloquial class, who is the instructor? We have a speaker, a standard speaker, and as the speaker needs to give consent every time. So there are many cases that you can come up with these confidence. So I think this is too broad. So that's my objection.
Thank you. Okay, so we have an objection. Is there other debate? Please.
Eric Rosano, I fully support this as somebody who came recently from Florida, where they're doing some things where they're encouraging students to record because they're trying to take over higher education. They're trying to infiltrate the classroom down there. And look this up, it was going on while I was there. They specified because they didn't want to go to the Supreme Court. They had me during lectures, not during discussion. So I told them, okay, all of my classes are discussion. It's a safety protocol for students and for faculty. I think what Lewis suggested is something that you can absolutely incorporate into your syllabus. Even with colloquiums, you can create a blanket beginning statement that says, in this class, including colloquiums, where we have received permission from the guest speaker, that we can do it in such a way where you are allowed to record in this context. You can make your exceptions for your specific classes, but I do think this needs to be in our classes, especially in the current regime of things. So I fully support it and would love to have great discussions about it off the record if you want to talk about it.
Is there further debate? Yeah, thank you.
Actually, I have to give a question. Can you provide some context for add some additional context for why you want to do this? The background. The doxing.
Part of the background here is recent incidents and costumes where photographs are taken and used publicly against people. But that said, I would offer to take this back to the Policy Board on Administration and we can tweak it to address these concerns and make it more clear where exceptions can apply. And we can table it for now and look back to the next meeting.
Is there any other debate or discussion? Are there? Okay.
In the Prince Graduate School of Higher Information Studies, I would suggest that we go ahead and vote. I think it's quite clear that if you'd like students to have that permission to be able to take audio and video, they may do that with written permission from the instructor, which seems very straightforward to put in
the
audio and video that happens, of course.
Withdrawing it.
I think the problem is urgent, not just in Florida, but everywhere. There are things I already feel uncomfortable saying in my classroom.
Thank you, Emily. Any other debate? Any discussion? Yes?
I just have a question. Would electronic consent count? If I put it on Brightspace and say today is allowed, or today is
written?
Okay.
Sorry, Sarah, your question was, does this include computer, Zoom, Brightspace, online mediated recordings as well? Okay.
In biology, this is not an objection, but just as a counterpoint to some other perspectives that were presented here, this removes any ability that I can tell of a student to improve any inappropriate language used by a professor during a course. I just want to put that out there, this is a point of interest.
Thank you. Any other debate or discussion?
This is already a policy, we're just trying to specify photography, yeah, I think that's what you said at the beginning, correct, Lewis? So, to the point just made, it's already a policy. The reporting point of it is already a policy, we're just clarifying the photographs as well.
Okay, thank you. Any other debate or discussion? Got exciting today, Dave.
There you go.
I didn't know it was going to happen. This is great. I love it. So, Larissa has made a motion, but then she has said that she would be willing to withdraw it in order to consider these suggestions and maybe refine the language. I might recommend talking to Office of Special Services as well to make sure this doesn't conflict with other CUNY policies. Is there any objection to Senator Swindell withdrawing this motion with the expectation she'll bring it in the future? Objection?
Yeah, I'd like to take a vote. I feel like we've had a deliberative discussion and people put things on the floor.
Can
we
just vote on the... If someone objects,
I would prefer that we
take it's still on the floor.
On the
end of the motion.
Excellent, thank you. Okay, so we do have an objection, which means the motion is on the floor. So we'll take a vote now. So a lot of, as I've said before, while you're readying your voting cards, and Dave will walk around and just hold them up, a lot of our business is through unanimous consent. In this case, we will have a vote. 31 is the magic number, so it's half plus one, 60. So I will ask for all of those in favor of making these changes to raise your card. Then I will ask everyone opposed, and then finally we'll do abstentions. So all in favor, please raise your card now. Yes, hang on 1 second. So we are going back to the motion here. So we're making a vote now. Because there was an objection, we don't vote on the objection. Sometimes we do, but not in this case. So if you are in favor of this policy being amended as seen here, please raise your voting card nice and high.
I get 33.
Okay, all opposed. Everyone, please lower your voting cards. All opposed. And last, I'll ask for abstentions. There's one abstention. So is it 33-1? Okay, so the votes we record are 33 in favor, 3 opposed, and 1 abstention. So the motion carries. Thank you. That was a, thank you, Emily, a interesting deliberative kind of conversation. And so I do hope that we would take those kinds of concerns that you have, and maybe, not that we need to amend this motion or this policy every month, but we want to be cognizant of these issues. Motion to adjourn. That's it. All right. So nice to see everyone. Get home safely. I'll see you in December. Stay hydrated, get sleep, all those pieces of advice. Wow.